Friend, if you will see the hurts of this life through the lens of faith, you will find the grace to forgive people. You will find the mercy to let go of bitterness. This morning we are in Genesis chapter 45, and we read verse 1 through 3, but eventually we'll get down through verse 11. But before we do any of that, I do have a question for you. And I'll explain the question before I ask it. Particularly on a day like today, at the beginning of a new year, people begin to be ready to make all sorts of resolutions. I'm going to lose this much weight. Very few people say I'm going to gain this much weight, but most people resolve I'm going to lose this much weight, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to go here, I'm going to do that, so on and so forth. We make all sorts of resolutions. Some we keep, some we don't. For some people, a new year resounds with newness and with freshness. We're just glad to start a new year. But for other people, for most people, I would presume, it's a reminder of a lot of things that they went through the last year, in 2015 in particular. And some people are reminded of the hurts that they experience. People that they lost, the people in their life that hurt them dearly, how they've been betrayed, how they've been sinned against, so on and so forth. And so this time of year sometimes, a lot of times, brings about a lot of regret for people. A lot of regret for people, a lot of looking back at the past year about how you've been hurt. And so I'm a realistic person, and so that's kind of the conclusion that I come to, that some people kind of come to the point where they just say, God, I'm so thankful that there's a new year, and Lord, I pray that this year is not like last year. You ever prayed that? You ever felt like, Lord, I pray that this year is not like last year? Because, Lord, I can't take another 2015. Lord, I need 2016 to be fresh. I need it to be new. I need it to be filled with grace. I want to try this morning to help alter your spiritual mindset in that sense. And so I'll ask you this question. What would it be like to view the hurts of this life through the eyes of faith? What would it be like to view the hurts of this life through the eyes of faith? When I think about a person who's been hurt, think about a person who's been betrayed, a person whom grave sin was committed against. There are many people in the Bible you could think of. I'm particularly drawn to Joseph. I can't think, other than Jesus, I can't think of another man in all of the Bible that was betrayed and hurt and mistreated like Joseph was. And the way he handles it, spectacular. So we're going to look at him this morning. But some of you, you may say, I don't know a whole lot about Joseph. I'll give you a little bit of background and we'll kind of come up to speed, because chapter 45 and Genesis 45 is really just an explosive chapter. It's an amazing, amazing chapter. In fact, every chapter in the Bible that can be said about it. But chapter 45 is especially explosive. But leading up to chapter 45, these are the types of things that took place. Joseph's father, you'll recognize this name. Joseph's father was a man by the name of Jacob. And Jacob had many sons. Joseph had many brothers there, and his brothers hated him. See, Joseph was the child of his father's old age. Joseph was the son of the woman whom Jacob worked for so many years. For 14 years, he worked for this woman after his father-in-law Laban lied to him. And finally, he receives this woman. She's barren. And then in his old age, in Jacob's old age, she bears him a son. And they name this child Joseph. And Joseph was especially favored. He's especially loved. He's very dear to his father and his mother, especially to his father. So beloved that Jacob adorns Joseph with this coat of many colors. Had to have been a very expensive coat. He gives him this coat and he honors Joseph. He takes care of Joseph. He loves Joseph. And Joseph's brothers hate him. And I mean that with all sincerity. They hated him with a deep, burning hate. Because Jacob loves Joseph, and he doesn't love us as much as he does Joseph. Joseph is 17 years. I would presume that Joseph had many dreams up to that point. They call him Dreamer. This dreamer, that's the way his brothers referred to him. But Joseph had at least two dreams when he was 17 years old. And both of the dreams were similar in interpretation, though they increased in severity. And the first dream that Joseph had when he was 17, the interpretation was this, that his brothers one day would bow before him. And so Joseph, as a young 17-year-old, maybe he was experiencing a little bit of youthful ignorance, maybe he was a bit naive, he goes and he tells his brothers, "Hey, brothers, this is the dream that I've had from God. One day, you are going to bow before me. Isn't that great?" You can imagine that 17-year-old kid saying that, "Isn't that great?" And his brothers looking at him, "You are going to rule over us? Who do you think you are, you dreamer?" So it seems like Joseph probably just shrugged it off. Oh, well, maybe they're just in a bad mood today. He goes back and he has another dream. And he comes back this time before his brothers and his mother and his father, and he tells them this second dream. And in the second dream, much like the first, just increases in its severity. Not only are his brothers bowing before him, but now his mother and his father bow before him. So he goes and he tells his family again, "You're going to bow before me. This is a dream from the Lord. Isn't this great?" And his brothers hate him even more. "It's not great. You're telling me you're going to rule over us? We already despise you." And I think it probably irritated Jacob a bit as well. It's kind of what the text intimates there. But it says that Jacob stored up these things in his heart. He kept these things in his heart because he loved Joseph. And he'll remember this later on. I'm sure his brothers did as well. Some days pass. Joseph's brothers just continue to burn in hate for him, which is apparent by their actions. And Joseph is at home. Joseph stays at home while all the other brothers go out and tend the flocks. They're out pasturing the flocks because Joseph is favored. The brothers need to go do the work. You can imagine that would make them burn even hotter. And so Jacob says, "Hey, Joseph, can you go check on your brothers?" Don't you think that probably made them happy? "Can you go check in on your brothers and see if they're okay?" And so Joseph begins his trek. He goes and he sees them. And as he's walking over this hill, his brothers notice him first, it seems. And they say, "Look, there's that dreamer coming over the hill. I know what we ought to do with him. Let's all get together and let's kill Joseph." How would you feel if your siblings, no, we're not talking about play talk here. How would you feel if your siblings colluded together to murder you? They said, "Let's kill Joseph. Let's put him to death." So, well, why should his blood be on our hands? So as Joseph comes across that hill and he comes up, say, "Hey, brothers, how are y'all doing?" They seize Joseph in violence and they rip that coat of many colors off of his shoulders. I'm sure tearing it and ripping it in the process. And then I assume that they proceeded to beat Joseph, probably within an inch of his life. And before they kill him, because they do say, "Why should his blood be on our hands?" They throw him into a dry well, into a cistern. That's a well that has no water in it. They throw him down in that deep, dark hole there in a bloody pool. And here they've got his torn up coat. And the text actually says in Genesis that after they throw him into this pool, this dry cistern, that they sit down for dinner. Yeah, exactly. I see some of you going, yeah, exactly. No remorse, no guilt, no guilty conscience whatsoever. They just sit down and they're going to eat dinner. And as they devise this plan, "Hey, let's take a goat, let's slaughter it and take the blood of that goat and put it all over the coat. We'll send it back to Dad, we'll send it back to Jacob and then say, 'Hey, Dad, Joseph must have got torn apart by wild animals. We don't know where he is. We just found his coat.'" I assume, and I put these two and two together here, I assume that they're devising this plan, smearing the blood of this goat on this jacket, on this coat of many colors, while they're eating dinner, and I think the dinner was probably the goat. They're having a barbecue with this goat, and they're sitting there discussing, what should we do with Joseph? How should we kill him, or what should we do with his body once we're done with him? I say, well, you know what? Somebody says, I got an idea. Rather than kill him, let's get some money out of him. Let's sell him. Because they had seen a band of Ishmaelite slave traders coming over the hill, and they say, let's call them over here. And when they come over here, let's sell Joseph. And so the Ishmaelites come over there, and they sell Joseph for 20 pieces of silver. How much are your siblings worth to you? They sell their own flesh and blood for 20 pieces of silver. So Joseph is carried away. This bloody, ripped up coat is sent off to Jacob, and they think that the problems are solved. Well, Joseph goes into Egypt. He's brought into Egypt by these Ishmaelite slave traders, and they sell him on the slave market. And a man by the name of Potiphar buys Joseph. Potiphar was the chief of the guard there in Pharaoh's house. The chief of the guard. And so Joseph comes in just as a lowly servant. But as you see it, time and time again, there in the book of Genesis, there's something peculiar about Joseph. And it's not him. It's who is with him. The Bible says that the Lord was with Joseph. And the Lord made everything that Joseph touched to prosper. It was almost like he had that Midas touch. Everything that Joseph touched was turning into gold, it seemed. Potiphar began to notice that he was prospering under Joseph. As Joseph was taking care of his area, he said, well, you know what? I'm going to give Joseph more responsibility. And he lifted Joseph's head all the way from a lowly servant to being over his entire household. Can you imagine that? How God can redeem a situation? So now Joseph is the second most powerful man in Potiphar's house. And nothing is kept from Joseph's grasp whatsoever except Potiphar's wife. But Potiphar's not the only one who notices Joseph. Potiphar's wife also notices Joseph. The Bible says that Joseph was a handsome man, a good-looking man. And Potiphar's wife began to long for Joseph, to lust after him, and she wanted him. Though Joseph, in all of his integrity, he is a man of God. He's going to do the right thing. Though he could have had her, he denies her, and he walks in his integrity. Men, may we be like that. Ladies, may we be like that. So Joseph walks in his integrity. He refuses Potiphar's wife time and time again. And after a while, she grew weary of his refusals. So he's in the house. She finds him. She beckons him to come to her. And he says, no, I can't do that. Your husband has made me master over everything in his house. He's kept everything, nothing from me except for you. You are his, and I won't lay a finger on you. And so for the second time, Joseph has his outer garment ripped off of him. He has his jacket ripped off of him. And as soon as she rips his jacket off, he runs out of the house because he's not going to be near that Jezebel. He runs out of the house and she screams rape. Potiphar's infuriated. Comes in, he gets Joseph. She says, he's trying to humiliate me. And so Potiphar throws Joseph into jail. Again, Joseph mistreated. Joseph now being accused of something he didn't do. He's only done the right thing up to this point. Joseph's thrown in prison. The prison guard begins to notice that everything Joseph does, even there in prison, prospers. Why? Because the Lord was with him. Everything Joseph touches prospers. And eventually, the master of the guard, the master of the prisoners, puts Joseph in charge of the entire prison. You imagine that? Going to jail and ending up the warden? That's what happens with Joseph. He is master over this prison. Eventually, there are two prisoners that are sent there into Joseph's cell, into his keep. One of them is the chief cupbearer to Pharaoh, the one who would taste Pharaoh's drink before he would take it. And the other was the chief baker, the one who would cook all the goods there for Pharaoh. Both of them were thrown into jail, and both of them had a dream. Joseph is called upon and says, I can interpret this dream. And so he interprets the dream, and one of them is delivered. The cupbearer is delivered up into Pharaoh's hand, and he's returned to his position. And the other, which is consistent with his dream, consistent with the interpretation given to Joseph, the chief baker, his head is removed from his shoulders. He's decapitated. So Joseph is shown to be a man of God, a man who can interpret dreams now. But Joseph stays there, and he languishes away there in the prison, seemingly never losing faith. And then all of a sudden, after a few years or so pass, Pharaoh has two dreams. And these dreams trouble him so badly that he beckons all of Egypt. Anybody who can interpret these dreams, come to me and tell me what these dreams mean. Eventually, Joseph is called upon there into Pharaoh's house. He comes to Pharaoh. Pharaoh tells him the dreams, and Joseph said, it is the Lord's to give interpretations. You've had two dreams, but the meaning is one. For the next 7 years, Egypt will experience plenty, and you can imagine Pharaoh celebrating. And then he says, but the 7 years after that are going to be extreme famine, and lots of people are going to die. Unless you do something. Pharaoh says, what should we do? He says, you ought to appoint a man of wisdom and discernment to be over Egypt, to gather for the next 7 years a fifth of grain from all of Egypt, so that during the 7 years of famine, all the people of Egypt will be provided for and taken care of. And that's the only way you're going to make it through this famine. And Pharaoh says, you've spoken wisely. I see no better man, no man more fit to do this task than you, Joseph. And so Pharaoh lifts Joseph's head out of that prison cell and makes him second in command in all of Egypt. There's God again, redeeming a situation. Be careful how you look at your bad situations. Here's God lifting Joseph up out of this terrible situation. 7 years of plenty go well, they go great, the storerooms are full. 7 years of famine hit. 2 years into the famine, it begins to hit Jacob's family there in the land of Canaan. Jacob is starving. His family is starving. So he sends his sons. Sons, you go to Egypt and you go buy grain. So Jacob's sons go there to Egypt to buy grain. And they come and they stand before, lo and behold, Joseph. Though they don't know that's him. For all they know, Joseph's dead or he's in some distant land. But they're standing before Joseph, who looks like, sounds like, smells like an Egyptian. And Joseph runs them through the rigor, I'm telling you. He puts them through some tests. He accuses them of things that they didn't do. He has them so worried, so terrified under his power as he tests them to see if they were really repentant about what they did to him. If their heart was really in the right place, if they really recognized that what they did when they sold him, when they beat him, when they betrayed him, if they really recognized what was wrong. And eventually, Joseph makes a demand of them that they cannot do. He says, you bring your brother Benjamin, my youngest brother. He doesn't say that, but he says, bring Benjamin, the youngest among you. You bring him and you leave him here to pay for your crimes. And Judah, the ringleader, stands up and says, sir, we can't do that. I will give my life in Benjamin's stead, because rather than my father dying for losing another son, I would rather die. That's where chapter 45 begins. Because Joseph sees the repentant heart of his brothers. So it says here in verse 1 of 45, then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, make everyone go out from me. You can imagine, he is about to lose it. Can you imagine all of the emotions running through Joseph's mind and body at that time? He's probably trembling out of maybe anger, maybe bitterness. Overwhelmed with grief, maybe overwhelmed with joy, happiness, I don't know. He says, everyone get out of here, because I can't have all of my subordinates see me lose it. Because if they see me lose it, they'll lose respect. So everyone get out of the room. So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud so that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. You can imagine, as he reveals himself to them, what's going through their mind. I imagine their entire lives pass before their mind. They are dismayed because here is a man with absolute power standing over them who could claim their heads at any moment. And it is the brother that they sold into slavery. All of their wrongs have now come to the surface. Everything that they have ever done is laid bare before this man who stands as judge over them. You can imagine they're saying, he knows everything that we did, everything that we said. You know, Joseph was still alive in that cistern when they threw him down there. Joseph heard the barbecue. He heard the discussions. He heard the change clanking around as they divvied up the spoil, sold him for 20 pieces of silver. Each person, 2 pieces of silver or so. Negligible. He remembers the cursing. He remembers every punch in the gut, every slap in the face, every one of his brothers who spat on him, the squeal of the goat as they slit its throat, the thud of his body as he hits the cistern floor. And now here he is, standing with absolute sovereign authority over his brothers. It says that they are dismayed at his presence. Friend, understand that Joseph is a picture of Jesus. Understand that you and I kneel before Christ, who knows every wrong that we've done, every time we have cursed his name, every time we have sinned against him, every time we have broken his commands, and he stands over us knowing all these things with absolute sovereign power, authority, right, and ability to execute justice on us. It would serve people right to be dismayed at his presence. Joseph's brothers certainly are dismayed at his. Verse 4 says, so Joseph said to his brothers, come near to me, please. You know, people in Joseph's position, men of authority, they don't make requests. This is not a request. That's just a polite way of saying, you do this. If Joseph, second in command in the most powerful nation on the earth, says, could you come here? What do? You come here. It's like my mom said, mama doesn't ask questions. I'm telling you to do this. So he says, come near to me, please. Can you imagine the fear and trembling in their bodies as they crawl? The Bible says they're bowed. As they crawl there before Joseph, and he sits there with these two guards to his left and his right with their swords or whatever weaponry that they are carrying. He says, come near. They must imagine in their minds, is this the moment the chickens come home to roost? Is this the moment that justice is repaid? Is this the moment that Joseph is avenged? Will we lose our heads in this moment? Is that why Joseph is calling us near? And they fear and they tremble. And they are dismayed as justice may rain down on each and every one of their necks. So just come near to me, please. And they came near. And Joseph said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. I know everything that you did. Don't think for a moment that I have forgotten how you have wronged me. I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Verse 5 says, which is strange. And now, do not be distressed. And we all scratch our heads and say, what? Would that be the response that you would be expecting from Joseph, who has every right, all the authority and power to exact justice on his brothers, vengeance on his brothers? Nobody would hold Joseph at fault for this. And yet Joseph says, do not be distressed. You know who Joseph sounds like? Joseph sounds like an angel of the Lord. Joseph sounds like those angels that you read about in the New Testament. The angel that came to Zechariah. The angel that comes to Mary and tells her that she's going to conceive of the Holy Spirit. What was the first reaction of these people as they see the angel? They cower in fear. They are dismayed. They are in distress. But what does the angel say? The angel says all the time, do not be afraid. And here's Joseph talking like an angel of the Lord. Do not be distressed. Friend, this is the same thing that Jesus says over you and I. Though he has all authority, all right, though he knows everything that you and I have ever done, all of the ill will we've had towards God because he tells us to do one thing and we want to do another, God stands over us, and yet what he says through his son Jesus to you even here this morning is, do not be distressed. You wouldn't expect that, but there is none like God. It's a picture of the mercy of Christ to sinners, the mercy of God towards you and I, that we could come before God, kneeling before him, and he say, do not be distressed, don't be dismayed, don't fear. Now, as you look at your life, back to the original thought, as you look at your life, and you think of the terrible things. Some of you say, I don't want to think about those things. Think about them. Think about them. Think about the terrible things that have been done to you. Think about the betrayals that you have experienced. Think about the treacherous deeds that other people have done to you, not even thinking about who you are or what you deserve or what you have done for them. How do you view those times? How do you view those events? How do you see those instances? I can tell you, I and my family have been betrayed in such a way before that I was so angry for a time that I could have put my arm through a wall. And I would have if I'd have known where the stud was. But I didn't want to punch the stud, so. But I was so angry that I almost did it anyway. Have you ever felt that betrayed? That hurt? How should you view those times? What would it look like to view those events, those betrayals, those treacherous deeds where people have hurt you so viciously? What would it be like to view the hurts of this life through the eyes of faith? This is what the eyes of faith look for and see. The eyes of faith look for and see the goodwill of God in all things. The eyes of faith look for and see the goodwill of God in all things. Trusting that the bad things that have happened, God has permitted them to happen for many reasons, for good reasons. I may not understand them all, but I do trust God. I want you to look at Joseph. I'm going to read it very quickly here, verse 5 through 9. Joseph's view of the terrible things that have happened. I'm going to read verse 5 through 9 with you. Joseph says, and do not now be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. You're guilty of it, but God sent me. before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You see how Joseph views the hurts of this life? He sees the good will of God in all things. May we be like Joseph. As you look back at 2015 and the rest of your life, may you begin to look at those misdeeds, the ill will that people have had towards you, the way they've betrayed you, the way they've acted treacherously, and may you see those events through the eyes, through the lens of faith. Friend, if you will see the hurts of this life through the lens of faith, you will find the grace to forgive people. You will find the mercy to let go of bitterness. Ultimately, this passage is not about that, though. Verse 10 and 11, I believe, is really what this passage is about. You remember who Joseph's father was? Jacob. Remember who Jacob's father was? Isaac. And Isaac's father is Abraham. Over and over again in the Old Testament, you read that God says of himself, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You know why he says that about himself? Because long ago, when he came to Abraham, he made a promise to Abraham. He says, Abraham, I will be your God, and you will be my people. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will provide for you, I will care for you, I will take care of all of your descendants, and your descendants will outnumber the stars in the heavens. And yet here's Jacob starving in Canaan. No provision. And yet God, through the suffering of Joseph, provided salvation for Jacob, provided provision for all of Israel to remain there in Egypt. This text primarily is about the fact that the faithful promise giver is also the faithful promise keeper. That the God who makes a promise is faithful to keep that promise. And many times he makes provision for the promise he makes you through suffering. Would you trust this morning that the faithful promise giver is also the one who keeps his promises? That God promises that all who call on the name of the Lord, they're not just going to be given food during a famine. They will be saved, the Bible says. They'll be forgiven of their sins and be granted everlasting life. Remember, I said that Joseph is a type. He's a type of Christ. He's a foreshadowing of Christ. Through the suffering of Joseph, God provides salvation for Israel, because that's Jacob's other name. Understand that through the suffering of Jesus, God provides salvation for all people. And he doesn't just give them bread to last through the famine. He gives them the bread which man eats and never dies. It's one thing for us to say this morning that we need to be like Joseph, and indeed, we need to be like Joseph. And we need to look at the bad things in life, the hurts in life, through the eyes of faith. But friend, first and foremost, you need to understand that God, through the suffering of Christ, has provided salvation for you and for this world, for all who believe. Would you pray with me?